Howdy, howdy, FA Nation. Welcome back. Dan Malin joined, as always, by Matt Sells for the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. We are previewing New Hampshire this week, and we get a little bit of a break coming up, so Matt and I will try to carry you into the break on a high note. Matt, how are you? What did you think of Atlanta? The last true Atlanta race.
Yeah, the last true Atlanta race, because obviously we found out beforehand that they were narrowing the track and repaving it, which clearly it desperately needed to be repaved as it got potholes in the middle of the race. Just proving the point that the service was old as all get out. A lot of drivers spoke up and said they did not like the idea of narrowing the track because it doesn't seem like, as Kyle Busch put it, the goal for everybody, like literally every track right now, is trying to widen the groove. That's why they put PJ1 down and the traction compound and whatever. Why is Atlanta trying to narrow it? And then Kyle Busch and Kurt Busch put on a flat-out show the last, like, 50 laps of that race. That was spectacular.
It was almost the Kyle and Kurt Busch show for the last two stages as well.
Yeah, basically. Those cars were pretty clearly the best on the track. Mm-hmm. Bowman had a pretty good car, but it could not compete with, Kyle and Kurt. Truex, by the way, snuck in there with a third-place finish, in case anybody forgot about that there. That was pretty impressive. There was some controversy because Kurt Busch used Ross Chastain kind of as a pick there. Essentially gave a team order to... Well, so Kurt describes it as they asked for a certain line and Ross Chastain obliged. Other people, if you're in the Kyle Busch camp, consider that a team order to basically get in the way of the 18 car. I don't know. Did you guys have scanners at the track? You were at the race.
No, not for the cup race on Sunday. We just kind of like both went and just kind of enjoyed the race. So didn't have scanners for the cup race. So I cannot confirm or deny any of that, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's what your teammate's there for, right? What's the point of having a teammate if you're not allowed to use them to help
right. In
that situation? Besides, Chastain was like well behind. He's just trying to stay on the lead lap and, whatnot. I don't understand the. Seems like there's always an excuse when Kyle Busch loses, and he's allowed to be like the
nary an excuse when he wins.
Yeah, the gloating, the gloating one when he wins. And
it's insane because he won the Xfinity race and then he finishes second in the Cup race, and it's right. Like that's just not good enough. I mean, it's the ultimate competitor in him, I guess.
Well, he's just salty because it was his brother too.
Yeah.
He wanted to keep the, because now in 1-2 finishes between the Busch brothers, they are now tied 2-2. So, I guess he wanted to keep the 3-1. He wanted to go up 3-1, I guess. I don't know. But that does put a serious wrinkle in the playoff picture, though. Because Kurt Busch came in, he was like 29 points to the good in 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And him winning now, I think 17th is 100-something points out, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pulling it up right now.
They showed it during the race, but I don't remember if they showed it, like, late enough where the actual running orders. But I want to say it's like Buescher is, like, 100-something points back.
Buescher is 96 points out of a playoff spot.
Yeah. So it's probably, at this point, going to take a win to get in based on who's in those last few playoff spots. So we'll see how the rest of these shake out, because they're not exactly like your cookie cutter tracks left before the playoffs. We get New Hampshire this week. Then we get, I think there's Watkins Glen before the playoffs, Indianapolis road course before the playoffs.
Right.
Michigan, I believe, is in there. And Daytona, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, Daytona closes out the season.
Yeah. Anybody can win that. Obviously, we saw McDowell do it at the beginning of the year, but going to be a kind of a crazy stretch. So, yeah, we get New Hampshire this week and then 2 weeks off because there's the Olympics. I thought overall Atlanta was a pretty sweet race. I had Kurt Busch to win it at plus 3,000. So that felt pretty nice. I did okay DFS-wise. Not not great, but.
Oh, I did much better for the Xfinity race. I pretty much got my ass handed to me for the Cup race. But I will say it was still just enjoyable just to be able to go out there because I was dreading the weather all week just because I heard it was going to be hot. I know it's going to be humid. But Sunday's race, it was raining light enough to where the rain actually felt very refreshing, but it wasn't heavy enough to have any impact on the race. So
who was in front and asking for a caution for the rain? Somebody played their strategy great and like was long pitting in the second stage, and then was hoping to God that they got a caution so that they could pit under caution and keep the lead. I don't remember.
Almirola?
I think it was. I think you're right. Yeah, every lap he's like, it's really raining, but he was like, not saying anything. So the NBC crew was like, I think you're gonna need more people for them to throw a caution.
No, it was very light. It felt really nice. But anyway, we have some pretty big news that was breaking early on Thursday. More clarification on the Brad Keselowski saga with Team Penske. I'll let you cover it since you are the guy, other than me just saying, yeah, he's officially out.
Yeah, what's been reported now, I guess, for a few weeks, and remember, the guys that were reporting these things, and Adam Stern and Jordan Bianchi and Bob Pockers, don't report these things unless they know it's good. They're not going to go on a whim. So when they broke the news that Keselowski was in talks to be a part owner at Roush, it was basically as good as gold that he was gone. Now, earlier on Thursday, we got confirmation that he is, in fact, not returning to Team Penske. Austin Cindric will be in the 2 car, which, you know, was kind of rumored there for a while because we were like, well, his father's the president of, or like the head of racing development for Penske. They're not going to stick his own kid in a satellite car. So we were pretty sure Cindric was going to go to the 2, but we also thought that meant De Benedetto was safe in the 21. That turns out not to be the case. Harrison Burton was announced as the guy that's taking over the 21 car for the Wood Brothers next year. So that leaves Matty D without a ride going into 2022. He's pretty bitter about it. He put out a video on Facebook and then linked it to his Twitter. I don't know if he took it down since or not, but it was kind of a raw emotional video where he kind of sort of threw some people under the bus without naming names after he said he wasn't going to throw people under the bus. So I get he's frustrated. You know, we can see where he winds up. There's a couple of interesting spots he could go. You can make the argument that Priest should be out in the 37 car, and he could, you know, Matty D could wind up there for JTG Doherty. You can make the argument that Fast Pasta should go back down to the lower level.
Obviously, yeah.
And Matty D could wind up in the 38 car. You could see him getting a part-time gig with Kolleg, because obviously AJ Allmendinger gets the full-time ride, and then or is Dinger getting the part-time ride? And
Haley's getting the full-time ride. Dinger's right. Getting the part-time ride.
So you could see him pairing up with the other half of the part-time ride. You know, for Dinger, you could see 23XI having another car. Obviously, Trackhouse has the one car that's not, that we don't know what's happening with it. So yeah, and then other big news is that Larson signed a 2-year extension to stay at Hendrick Motorsports. So he's there through 2023. Hendrick Cars.com is signed up for what, 35? I think it's 35 races over the next 2 years to be on that car. And Rick Hendrick said, yeah, by the way, the numbers, the traffic numbers on his site, HendrickCars.com, have been through the roof since they put it on the 5 car.
Well, it helps when the 5 car is also winning too.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, right? And Fox only shows the leader, so he won the last 4 races on Fox. You know, they're going to show him a lot. So, yeah, that's kind of the big news there. You know, DeBenedetto's another guy that's going to need a ride. Kurt Busch obviously still needs a ride. Ross Chastain needs a ride. Newman is now, I would assume, out in the 6 car. I don't see Roush going to a 3-car team, so I would assume that Newman is out.
Could he just as easily retire?
I would assume at this point he's going to retire. I mean, you brushed death once at Daytona. Do you really need to do it again? Like, clearly he's a family guy. He's got some stuff going on the side. His girls are getting older now. I would, you know, it's not like he's a young chicken anymore. So, and there's some crazy rumor about Kevin Harvick apparently trying to buy JTT Doherty Racing.
I heard that as well. I wasn't sure if we wanted to comment on that.
I don't know how much stock I put in it, but
yeah, I also heard some rumors that like JTG, like they were not for sale at all.
Well, neither was Ganassi, and Trackhouse wound up buying them. So, I don't know. There's some crazy rumors. They're not being reported by anybody that would report it if they had legs.
But Billy season is already upon us.
Yeah, it's pretty wacky out there. So. So, yeah, with that, you want to turn our attention to New Hampshire?
Yeah, let's do it. You want to talk schedule first? Because I know going into our last week before a few weeks off, have a lot going on personally. So I will be covering the Cup playbook this Sunday.
Yeah, most likely Dan's covering
for me. Looking forward to it.
I'm trying to pack up my apartment and help my lovely wife out because she's been doing a lot of it. There's also like a bazillion NFL tools that I'm trying to get up before I leave for vacation on Sunday night. Pretty busy over here in the sales household. Track breakdown, you may have noticed if you're listening to this on Thursday night or very early Friday morning. Track breakdown's not up yet. It will be up early Friday morning. And then we'll have, you know, rankings and projections first run up some point Friday, probably later than normal. And then Dan is covering the playbook for me graciously on, you know, he'll probably get that out Saturday at some point. That's basically it. I believe he's going to take the core plays too, although we might talk about that. I don't know. I'll have the best bets piece out, I don't know, some point over the weekend. See if I can't keep my streak going. I've been 8-0 in the last 8 races and having the winner in the best bets piece.
Nice.
So, yeah, we're going to see if we can't keep that going. Right. That's kind of the schedule on my end.
So let's talk about New Hampshire. We were discussing before the podcast that it compares nicely to Phoenix, Richmond. It's a short track. Well, it's a mile long, but it's a flat one. So just
this has been debated for a while, by the way, as to whether or not you can count it as a short track because it is flat. It's not like a 1 mile Dover, which is high banked and you just kind of stay on the throttle. It's more like, you know, it's twice the size of Martinsville, but it's just as flat. So can you count it as a short track? Probably. They're going to have the short track package on the cars this week, 750 horsepower, low downforce. About 300 laps in this one. You know, we've seen it. It's kind of some beating and banging. You can pass once you're up front. You do see kind of a lot of laps led at one time. So in a short track form, that fits. But you can move up here better than your standard short track. So it's kind of an interesting test and mix of a little bit of intermediate and a little bit of short track.
All right. Now, let's just get to the driver pool. No point in delaying the most expensive driver once again is going to be Kyle Larson. He's 11,200 on DraftKings. What is his track history like here? Obviously, if you're playing Larson, you're almost New Hampshire is a track where you can probably build around two dominators, but most of my Kyle Larson lineups are just built around him being a solo dominator. And I'm not going to say he's on a skid, but he's obviously not winning 5 straight races like he was a month ago. Is he still in play? Has he been good here?
He has been good here. He's got a pretty solid average finish in the last 5 races here. Not spectacular, but he does have 2 top fives in the last 4 races he's run here. So that's pretty impressive. And he's used to moving up pretty well, about 6 or 7 spots a race on average. So he's starting 10th. Obviously, he didn't quite have the Atlanta race we all kind of figured he would. So he got bumped back in the starting spot. So it is interesting to me, though, to see his price come down. I know that he didn't he wasn't hitting value when he was up at 12,000, but he's starting 10th at a track he's done well at in the past. So it's just kind of interesting to me to watch them lower the price on him. And in terms of multi-dominators, we've seen in the last five races here, we have seen two of those races have had two guys lead 100 or more laps. Two of those races, we've seen one guy lead 100 or more laps. And in the other one, nobody led 100, more than 100 laps. So you can do a double dominator build. You can also get away with a single dominator build here as well.
What's your opinion on the rest of the Hendrick Motorsports cars? William Byron is 10,600. He's getting more expensive every week.
Yeah.
Had a disappointing run last week, but the car is still incredibly fast. He's starting P16. He's 10-6. Do you feel okay going there? I mean, his last three races have been so-so. But, like, at the same time, like, the Chevys have been phenomenal.
Yeah, the Chevys as a whole have been really, really good. Obviously, Hendrick as a team has been really, really good. He's been okay here. He's got three top 15 finishes in his three races here. Hasn't yet cracked the top 10. So, he's kind of been sputtering a little bit of late. I mean, that's hard to say for a guy that's still leading the I think he still leads the Cup Series in top 10s this year. He's got 16 of them. But, yeah, he hasn't quite been as good as we'd seen earlier. Now, the last few races in this package, he's run pretty well in. So there's that. He also is starting 16th. So you got some nice PD there. But that's a pretty steep price. I mean, 10-6 for 5X value at 10-6, you need, what, 53 points?
Yeah.
Of him, and he's starting 16th. So let's see. If he's starting 16th, that gives you 27 points right off the bat. So you got to double that, which means he's got to get to what? Like a top four?
About. Yep. I think
about a top four, top three.
Yep.
Top three hits it. Top four basically ties it. So he's got kind of a lot of work to do to get there.
How do you feel about Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman? Elliott is starting third, and he is 9,800. Bowman is starting fifth, and is surprisingly only 8,200 on DraftKings. Feels like a bit of a trap, but can we trust Bowman in this package at this track?
So Bowman's got a very similar record here to Byron. The difference is that, obviously, Bowman is starting 11 spots closer to the front. He is also, though, $2,400 less. So there's trade-offs there. That means that Bowman essentially can hit value by basically just holding his spot. But that might be a little bit of a taller task for him at this particular track. So I don't know. I have a tough – I mean, I like Larson a lot this week. Larson's still the top Hendrick car for me. After that, it's kind of a muddled – little bit of a muddled mess, to be honest, because none of them really have led laps here previously. Obviously, this year their cars are a lot faster. But I don't know. I mean, what's your read on Bowman and Chase this week?
I probably won't play Chase strictly because in that price range, there are a couple drivers. There are other drivers that I'm kind of looking at, and I know we'll touch on them shortly when we get to the other big teams. I am inclined to play Bowman a little bit in GPPs. The price tag kind of jumps off the page and makes me think that he'll be chalky, but at the same time, the starting spot is why I think ownership could still be kept down a little bit. Not that he's going to be coming in at 10 to 12% ownership. So I am fine playing Bowman in GPPs. I'll sprinkle Chase into a couple lineups just because I'm trying to be more disciplined and diversify my lineups a little bit. But there are just other drivers that I'm looking at to potentially dominate the race if I'm not building around Larson.
Yeah, I mean,
do you want to pivot to those drivers?
Pivot to the ones we would play over Chase.
Well, not over those two, but not necessarily over Larson, because he's still probably be my most owned driver.
Yeah, Larson is gonna be mine probably too. I mean, I know he's pricey, but the PD's there, the car is there, track history is good. He's actually registered a pretty decent amount of fastest laps here previously in worse equipment. So
the JGR drivers in this package have done pretty well this year. Denny Hamlin might be my favorite play of the four. This seems like a really sneaky opportunity where he could bust out and have one of those dominating performances where he leads 100 laps. That's just my opinion. He's starting sixth and he's $10,000, and I don't think ownership will be crazy on him. Christopher Bell is obviously going to be a nice play that people will look at. He's only $7,700. He's starting ninth, and he dominated New Hampshire previously in the Xfinity Series, and he's going to run the Xfinity race in the 54 car for JGR on Saturday. Are you okay playing the JGR drivers? I know there could be some hesitancy, possibly going to Kyle Busch and MTJ on the pole with so many better plays based on PD and potential dominators that are right behind them. Sorry for the rant.
No, you're good. I would say the Truex is still going to be my least owned JGR guy. I know he finished third at Atlanta last week, and that is a sign of life. He's 9,100, and this is the track he's done well at. But still, if we're going to play him, you got to keep MTJ to GPP formats. He's still not a cash-ready play, even with his track history here. Even with the fact that JGR has generally done better in the 750 horsepower than the 550 horsepower this year. Kyle Busch at 10.9, he's going to have to lead a chunk of laps to hit that value here. I'm probably more on Denny and C-Bell.
You know, we talk about Kyle Busch needing to lead laps, but in his last four races, he's led, you know, he led 30 at Pocono, 30 at Pocono 2, only four at Road America, but that was that didn't have a lot of laps. But then, you know, 91 laps led last week. So, I mean, you know, he has four straight finishes in the top three. And I get it, like, the price tag is high, but, you know, he is returning value at the moment. It's strange because, you know, we were crapping on him a year ago when he wasn't winning and earlier in the year when he was kind of struggling out of the gate. But he's found his groove.
Yeah, he has. And a comparable race would be the second Pocono – the first Pocono race. When he started fifth, finished second, led 30 laps, had 17 fastest laps, was 10,000 and hit 60 DK points. So he hit 6X there. I'm just saying at 10.9, just be aware you're going to need him to lead a chunk of laps to hit value. I'm not saying he hasn't. He has. He's looked a lot better of late, for sure. But again, here's, you know, a comparable one, I guess, the Toyota Save Mart 3/5. So Sonoma started fifth, finished fifth, two fastest laps, two laps led, was 10.3 on DK and hit 40 points. So you're going to need the laps led to hit the value is all I'm saying. I mean, he's capable of it. He's done well here in the past, and he seems to have his groove back. So,
all right. Speaking of another guy who's done well here before, with numerous top fives in his last five races here, Kevin Harvick, even at a track last week that he had a great history at, he started 21st, finished 11th for 47 points on DraftKings. This week he is 10,300, starting 12th. This is a track where he's taken home the lobster. I don't know if I'm still confident in him yet, just because the price tag is so high. There are other SHR guys that I'm looking at this week, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, the price tag is high. It's mostly because of his track history. I will say that SHR has generally done better in the 750 horsepower package of late than the 550. They're still scrambling for speed in the 550, but the 750 seems to be doing better for them in general. I mean, where he's starting, you don't need him to lead laps to hit value, but you definitely need him to go grab a top five for sure to hit value. He's a GBP guy.
I want to save one of these guys for the playbook, just so we're not giving away all the free plays. So who would you rather talk about between Almirola and maybe Chase Briscoe?
Let's talk about Almirola, because he seems to be all over the place this week. Between, like, I've seen his name a bunch on Twitter already, so I don't know that it's a secret.
Okay, so the secret is out that he is good. Like, flat tracks have been his bread and butter of late. I'm pretty sure he did well at Phoenix earlier this year. He's starting 22nd. He's only 8,400. I saw some sites simply offering -130 odds on Almirola simply to finish in the top 20, which I wish I could have jumped on if gambling was legal in Georgia. But Almirola at 8,400, do you think we'll get maybe 20% ownership on Almirola? Because the last time I went heavy on Almirola was, I think, at Phoenix or Martinsville. It was one of the flatter tracks. And I thought ownership was going to be quite high on Almirola, just given how in this package and at this style of track, he can excel. But then he only came in at 10% owned, and I was pretty excited about that. Do you think he eclipses 15% ownership in GPPs this week or no?
I think he does, only because he led laps at Atlanta last week. Like, I know there's, like, it was technically a pit cycle and whatever and strategy, but people are just going to go, oh, he led laps, he looked good, he was up front, let's play him. And the fact that SHR tends to do better in this package and, you know, not a great amount of laps, but he did at least run laps and then sat there and complained about the rain not coming. But in this package specifically, Almirola has been better than in the 550. I mean, he held his spot in the top five at Nashville, which is, yes, not a flat track, but it's in this package.
Right.
So that was impressive. He moved up at the, you know, road course, which isn't necessarily a strong suit. I think he's a reasonable play. He's got the track history here. He does like the flatter tracks. He likes this package, so.
All right, let's talk about Team Penske real quick. I believe it was last week you noted that in the 550 package, you typically rank them Keselowski, Blaney, Logano. For the 750 package, you flip it, and it's Logano, Blaney, Keselowski. Logano is, I imagine, he's going to be pretty popular. He's done well at Phoenix. And
this is also technically his home track.
Yeah, but I mean,
sort of. He's from Connecticut.
No, I get it. He's from Connecticut, and it's New Hampshire, but that's like two states away. I don't know if I qualify that.
He considers it his state.
He's an idiot.
Okay. I mean, I'm just tossing it out there. Also, MTJ considers like five tracks his home track. So.
And he's an idiot, too.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, I mean, Logano's done well here. The 750 horsepower package, I think every one of his top 10 finishes this year have come in this package. For whatever reason, they can't figure out the other one. But in this one, this car's got real nice speed. He's a little lower price than I thought he would be, given his track history and that he's starting a little further back in the pack than we expected him to. I don't want to say I'm all in on Logano, because the last time I went all in on Logano, it did not go well for me.
For me, it was last week.
But I'm pretty solid on Logano this week, for sure.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Perfectly fine playing him at 9,500, starting P15. Keselowski, I'm probably just going to play out of necessity, even though I don't like the starting spot or the price tag, but I do want to get him into...
I mean, he did dominate here last year.
I completely forgot about that. You are correct.
He dominated here and he dominated Richmond, which is why everybody thought he was a shoo-in to win the championship, and then he laid a flipping egg at Phoenix.
Yeah.
But that car was unbeatable at New Hampshire last year. He led a boatload of laps.
But then again, how motivated is he?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, he's clearly mailed it in the last, like, month at Penske. He hasn't cared. He's already in the playoffs, so it's not like he's fighting for a playoff spot. He knows he's locked in. And even if there's more than 16 guys with a win, he's still fine on points. So it's not like he's going to miss out. I just don't think he's really all that motivated at this point. But you kind of got to have him because he's going to catch a break at some point and be a factor. And then you're going to go, dang it, Kez did it again and we didn't play him. So,
what's your read on Chris Buescher this weekend? Five straight races with 30 DK points or less. He's starting.
He's kind of fading 18. Right now, right?
Yeah, he's cooled off significantly.
I mean, it's not, and I mean, he does have to make a push to make the playoffs at this point. So he's going to need huge points days. We saw Kurt Busch make up that gap. I mean, yes, he won at Atlanta, but even coming into Atlanta, he had made up like a 70-point gap in like three races or something. So it's doable, but they got to find that mojo they had earlier this year. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember exactly what he did at Phoenix earlier this year. But yeah, he's kind of cooling down. We don't really like to play the guys that are cooling down. Not generally the best idea for DFS.
I meant to ask this at the beginning of the show, so I apologize for kind of butting in. But what kind of impact could a Kevin Harvick or Denny Hamlin win have on the playoff landscape? Because obviously it locks one of them in, and you have to assume that they're already kind of locks. But does that?
I mean, like, Denny's still the points leader?
Last I checked, I thought he was maybe 14th. Sixth, and Harvick was sitting at like 14th.
According to what I'm looking at after Atlanta, based on the just straight up points lead, Denny Hamlin is the points leader.
Oh, is he still?
He's still somehow without a friggin' win. And
well, he was leading 200 laps at Martinsville earlier.
Yeah, but like he's got less stage wins than Larson. He's got zero wins, the same top fives and the same top tens. I don't understand how Hamlin is still the points leader, but that's a discussion for another day. And Harvick looks like ninth in points. Now, I don't know how that stacks up, you know, if you just go based off of point, like the guys hoping who don't have wins. Like, I don't know where they stack up because clearly several of the guys between them have wins. So let me see if I can't. Here's the projected playoff standings, I guess. Harvick would be 13th right now in the playoff standings. 14th? 14th.
Oh, that must have been what I was looking at earlier.
Yeah, so NASCAR.com has the standings with the projected playoff seeds, and Harvick would be 14th. Reddick is 15th, and Austin Dillon is 16th. So, yeah, I mean, Denny doesn't have a win, obviously, but even without a win, he would still, based on points, be the fourth seed in the playoffs. So he's fine either way. So those guys are in, right? What would really shake things up, obviously, is if you get, like, I don't know. If Matt DiBenedetto comes out, and keep in mind, flat tracks are generally his bread and butter, and they've actually been running really well of late. If DiBenedetto comes out and wins in New Hampshire, then that's going to shake things up because you're going to put Austin Dillon out of the playoffs, assuming that they all hold their spots. Obviously, this depends on running order or whatever and stage points and all that good stuff. But then Austin Dillon would be out. Reddick would be in. And right now there's 1 point between the two of them. Or five, I guess there's 5 points between the two of them. So it's pretty close. So if you get a guy outside the cutoff line who wins any one of the next like four races, Harvick doesn't have that much of a, I mean, he's not going to be that concerned right now. He's like, I don't know, he's a pretty decent chunk above the cut line. About 159 points above it. So that's pretty decent.
All right, moving on to some more value-esque plays. We're reaching down sub 8K. We're still above 7K. Who are your favorite plays in the 7K range? Some standouts might be Ryan Newman, maybe even Ricky Stenhouse, although I think ownership could actually be pretty light on him based on last week, but at the same time, I don't like him in this package. Ross Chastain is probably everyone's sweetheart this weekend. 7,000 starting P20. You have to think he can easily move up and hit 5X.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at Daniel Suarez too. He's turning pretty far back there. I mean, he's, I know
he is 8,900. Good lord.
Yeah, I'm pointing him out because he's 5,700 on FanDuel.
Okay.
So, budget play on FanDuel for free, 31, starting 31st. He's been really good at this track, and that car is generally faster in this package than the 550. Ryan Newman's going to be pretty popular, starting pretty far back there. He's run well here. The tight, flat tracks are generally where Newman's inability to let people pass shines. And, you know, I kind of like Corey LaJoie.
I could see that.
I kind of like Corey LaJoie. He's had a history moving up here. The seven car has been, I think I've noticed it being a little faster in this one than the 550. Generally, the intermediate tracks have not been very kind to LaJoie, but
he's a guy though that if you're playing him at 5,700, you have to understand, like, there's an okay chance he hits 5x value, but there's still a really strong chance that he hits 4x value. And as a value play, if you're pairing him with the right dominators and he goes out and he can get you 24 to maybe 26 points, like, you'll take that if you have the right dominators and right. The other PD plays, like, you can still win pretty well with Corey LaJoie, even not getting a top 20.
Yeah, for sure. But I do like that breakdown because, yeah, we're not tossing him out there. It's like he can be a slate breaker. It's more like you're looking for the right pairing with him and a dominator, but he can still be pretty good.
If we're looking at drivers under 6K, I'd probably trust him the most.
Under 6K?
On DraftKings.
Yeah, because like half the field's under 6K on FanDuel. Yeah, under 6K, yeah, for sure.
I mean,
talking about under 7?
Under 7, I'd go up to, like, Newman, Chastain. I'm even going to play Reddick because I think 6,800 is too cheap for a kid that's rolling in with 3 straight top 10s and 4 straight finishes in the top 11.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. Anything else you wanted to touch on? Any drivers? I feel like we kind of flew through this, even though it was a nearly 40-minute podcast.
Yeah, no, I think we're good. Stay tuned for the track breakdown. I'll have all those helpful tidbits and stats tables that you have grown to love or at least tolerate. Rankings will be out, projections will be out, and then Mr. Malin over here has graciously said he will cover the Cup playbook. So the last few times he's covered the Cup playbook, people have done pretty well. Well,
pressure's on. Thanks, Matt.
You know, I make sure my job.
Let me direct you to my Xfinity playbooks that are great through 2 stages.
Yeah, so, you know, it'll be a fun race to watch. And then if Joey Logano wins, you get to watch a grown man run away from a lobster.
Yeah, that's right. They give away like
a live lobster.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And Joey Logano is deathly afraid of it.
NASCAR is the sport where they give away clocks and seafood as trophies and guitars now.
Yep.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you and best of luck to the FA Nation.
Best of luck, FA Nation.